So we're going to offer the verse on the board also. So just quickly read it. Yatra Yogeshvara Krishna. Please repeat responsively if you like. Yatra Parto Danurdaraha. Tatra Sri Vijayo Bhutir. Drudva Nitir Matir Mama. Yatra Yogeshvara Krishna. Yatra Parto Danurdaraha. Tatra Sri Vijayo Bhutir. Drudva Nitir Matir Mama. So please repeat. If you know. Yatra Yogeshvara Krishna. Yatra Parto Danurdara. Tatra Sri Vijayo Bhutir. Anyone else? No? Okay, so nice because we are a bit short of time. Yatra, where? Yoga is Varaha, the master of mysticism. Krishnaha, Lord Krishna. Yatra, where? Partaha, the son of Prita. Danu Daraha, the carrier of the bow and arrow. So the way I've prepared the class, I'm just stopping here 1 second, because I prepared the class in such a way that now I'm going to explain about this word, Danur Daraha, which means, because I prepared in such a way that I'll make stops and then I'll carry on in order to explain certain things that I was looking for information there and here and there. So, Danur Daraha, in the Srimad Bhagavatam, first canto, you know Srimad Bhagavatam? Yeah? Danur Veda is first canto, 7th chapter, verse 44, purport. And then Danur Veda means military science. So here is Danur Daraha, is the carrier. Daraha is a carrier, and Danur is a bow and arrow. So it's military science. It's one of the Vedas. It's part of the Vedas, and it's explained that this was taught by Dronacharya to Arjuna, with all its confidential secrets of throwing and controlling by Vedic hymns. It's a gross military science, Prabhupada writes, is dependent on material weapons, but finer than that is the art of throwing the arrows saturated with Vedic hymns, which act more effectively than gross material weapons like machine guns or atomic bombs. The control is by Vedic mantras or the transcendental science of sound. It is said in the Ramayana that Maharaj Dasharat, the father of Lord Rama, Maharaj Dasharat is the father of Lord, which is his name every day, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, used to control arrows by sound only. He could pierce his target with his arrow by only hearing the sound, without seeing the object. So this is, Prabhupada explains, so this is a finer military science that the gross military material weapons use nowadays. So Arjuna was taught all this, that's why it is called here Danur Daraha. Yatra is where Yogeshvara Krishna, where the master of all mystic powers, yoga, is where Yatra, where Parto is Arjuna, Danur Daraha is the carrier of bow and arrow. He was the greatest arrow, he was very expert in his time. So now we continue with it is okay this way I've done it. I've prepared the class like this. So continue with Tatra, there, Srir means opulence, but also is translated sometimes like in this morning, in the morning we chant Shiguru Charana Padma at 7:15. And she also is translated as beauty or, sorry, here is, opulence, beauty, or Lakshmi, which is the goddess of fortune. And then Vijayaha, which means victory, like we chant Kijai all the time, Kijai, Jai, Jai. So V emphasizes Vijay, victory, Bhutihi. Bhutihi is exceptional power. Dhruva, certain, sorry. Dhruva, certain. Nitihi, morality. Mati, mama, my opinion. So I'm going to read the translation by Srila Prabhupada. Wherever there is Krishna, the master of all mystic powers, and wherever there is Arjuna, the supreme archer, there will also certainly be opulence, victory, extraordinary power, and morality. That is my opinion. I read it again. Wherever there is Krishna, the master of all mystics, and wherever there is Arjuna, the supreme archer, there will also certainly be opulence, victory, extraordinary power, and morality. That is my opinion. These are the concluding words of... Who is speaking here? Yes, Sanjaya. You know Sanjaya there in Hastinapur and is playing the whole Gita to Dhritarashtra, which is the king. So... hold on a second. So the purport. Let's go for the purport and then I'll do some stops. Not much time, actually. The Bhagavad Gita began with an inquiry of the Dhritarashtras. He was hopeful of the victory of his sons, assisted by great warriors like Bhishma, Drona, and Karna. So, from the Bhagavad Gita, tomorrow we'll read setting the scene. It's the beginning again. We start again. So, in the fourth paragraph, actually, I'm going to jump this because we don't have much time. We'll read it tomorrow. Prepared so much information, so I'll jump a little bit here and there. So we have the most important things only. He was hopeful that the victory would be on his side. I'm reading again from the purport. But after describing the scene on the battlefield, Sanjaya told the king, "You are thinking of victory, but my opinion is that where Krishna and Arjuna are present, there will be all good fortune." I'm reading from the purport, okay? Page 708. He directly confirmed that Dhritarashtra could not expect victory for his side. Victory, Vijaya, was certain for the side of Arjuna. Why? Because Krishna was there. Krishna's acceptance of the post of charioteer for Arjuna was an exhibition of another opulence. Krishna is full of all opulences. So here I have a quote from the Vishnu Purana, 6547, defining Bhagavan, which is Aisvarasya Samagrasya Viryasya Yasaha Sriya Jnana, etc. And then, there is actually a nice Srila Jiva Goswami, which is one of the six Goswamis of Vrindavan, gives actually a particular interpretation of Bhagavan, which is the holder of opulences. But he explains that Krishna's nature is such that whoever comes in contact with Krishna cannot resist serving him. No one can resist feeling move to worship and adore, worship his charming personality. As Lord Krishna, he attracts the love of everyone. So it's very nice definition, a nice way of saying this. He's an all-attractive person. And then I continue from the purport. and renunciation is one of the opulences. There are many instances of such renunciation, for Krishna is also the master of renunciation. And I'm going to jump this because there is no time. And there was a prepared pastime of in the Krishna book where Krishna shows this renunciation opulence in a battlefield. And because of this, it's called Ranakor. Is that? Ranakora. Because I'll summarize the story. It's with Jarasandha, who was battling with Krishna, with Lord Krishna, and Lord Krishna decided just to abandon. He just barefoot, without arm, weapons, he just ran away with Balaram. But that was not because was a coward or was scared of fighting against Jarasandha, you know, but because he's very renounced. He doesn't need to show off that, yes, I can defeat you. So he had some arrangement, other things, and one of them that was he had to go and marry Rukmini. So because there was a letter, confidential letter, so yes, he's abandoned. So it's another instance in the Krishna book, you can read it. I'll tell you where. Krishna book 52, chapter 52, where he shows very, he's very renounced, you know, it's no problem, you know. He's the greatest, but still, he's not attached to victory or anything like that, you know. So, second. So I'll continue with the purport. The fight was, we are in the second paragraph of page 708. The fight was actually between Duryodhana and Yudhishthira. Arjuna was fighting on behalf of his elder brother, Yudhishthira, because Arjuna, Krishna and Arjuna, Prabhu, you can have a Bhagavad Gita if you like. You can continue, follow with us if you like. Okay. So, because Krishna and Arjuna were on the side of Yudhishthira, Yudhishthira's victory was certain. The battle was to decide who would rule the world, and Sanjaya predicted that the power would be transferred to Yudhishthira. It is also predicted here that Yudhishthira, after gaining victory in this battle, would flourish more and more, because not only was he righteous and pious, but he was also a strict moralist. He never spoke a lie during his life. So tomorrow we'll also read some in regards of this, in regards of Yudhishthira. So I'm going to jump this also because we're short of time. So I want to focus on other things. I continue with the purport. There are many less intelligent persons who take Bhagavad Gita to be a discussion of topics between two friends on a battlefield, but such a book cannot be a scripture. Some may protest that Krishna incited Arjuna to fight, which is immoral, but the reality of the situation is clearly stated. Bhagavad Gita is the supreme instruction in morality. The supreme instruction of morality is stated in the ninth chapter, in the 34th verse, Manvana Bhava Madbhakto, etc. One must become a devotee of Krishna, and the essence of all religion is to surrender unto Krishna. Sarma Dharman Parityaja Mamekam Saranam Braja. The instructions of Bhagavad Gita constitute the supreme process of religion and of morality. All other processes may be purifying and may lead to this process, but the last instruction of the Gita is the last word in all morality and religion. Surrender unto Krishna. This is the verdict of the 18th chapter. So, from Bhagavad Gita, we can understand that to realize oneself by philosophical speculation and by meditation is one process, but to fully surrender unto Krishna is the highest perfection. This is the essence of the teachings of Bhagavad Gita, the path of regulative principles according to the orders of social life and according to the different courses of religion may be a confidential path of knowledge. But although the rituals of religion are confidential, meditation and cultivation of knowledge are still more confidential. And surrender unto Krishna in devotional service in full Krishna consciousness is the most confidential instruction. This is the essence of the 18th chapter. Another feature of Bhagavad Gita is that the actual truth is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna. The absolute truth is realized in three features: impersonal Brahman, localized Paramatma, and ultimately the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna. Perfect knowledge of the absolute truth means perfect knowledge of Krishna. If one understands Krishna, then all the departments of knowledge are part and parcel of that understanding. Krishna is transcendental, for he is always situated in his eternal internal potency. The living entities are manifested of his energy and are divided into classes, eternally conditioned and eternally liberated. Such living entities are innumerable, and they are considered fundamental parts of Krishna. Material energy is manifested into 24 divisions. The creation is effected by eternal time, and it is created and dissolved by external energy. This manifestation of the cosmic world repeatedly becomes visible and invisible. In Bhagavad Gita, five principal subject matters have been discussed: the Supreme Personality of Godhead, material nature, the living entities, eternal time, and all kinds of activities. All is dependent on the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna. All conceptions of the absolute truth, impersonal Brahman, localized Paramatma, and any other transcendental conception exist within the category of understanding the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Although superficially the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the living entity, material nature, and time appear to be different, nothing is different from the Supreme. But the Supreme is always different from everything. Lord Chaitanya's philosophy is that of inconceivable oneness and difference. This system of philosophy constitutes perfect knowledge of the absolute truth. The living entity in his original position is pure spirit. He is just like an atomic particle of the Supreme Spirit. Thus Lord Krishna may be compared to the sun and the living entities to the sunshine. Because the living entities are the material energy of Krishna, they have a tendency to be in contact either with the material energy or with the spiritual energy. In other words, the living entity is situated between the two energies of the Lord, and because he belongs to the superior energy of the Lord, he has a particle of independence. By proper use of that independence, he comes under the direct order of Krishna. Thus, he attains his normal condition in the pleasure-giving potency. So, sorry, I'm just prepared a lot, but I need to organize and adjust to time. Sorry about that. What I'll do is I like to go to the Chatura Sloki, because today is the last verse of the book. So Chatura Sloki is the essence of Bhagavad Gita. So I like to read this for you first. It's, and these four verses, which is 10, starting with 10:8, are the essence of Bhagavad Gita, and they are called the Chatura Sloki Gita. They remove the distress of all living beings and bring about all auspiciousness. Understanding who Krishna is and how he reciprocates with his pure devotees, we naturally desire to surrender unto him. When we surrender unto the all-powerful, all-knowing Supreme Personality of Godhead, we attain true security and peace. Devotees, Hare Krishna, welcome. Please take a Bhagavad Gita if you like. Normally we have there, but today. Devotees see all as Krishna's mercy and thus know that nothing unfavorable can befall them. Their faith and knowledge grant them peace even in the most difficult circumstances. So please, if you like, I like to read this Chaturasloki and a little bit more because they are really nice verses. So because we are concluding today, I think it's relevant. So it's 10:7. We'll just read the translations. Anyone like to read? 10:7. 10:7. Chapter 10, verse 7. I'll start reading just to make it faster. One who is factually convinced of this opulence and mystic power of mind, today's verse is actually talking about the mystic power of Krishna, engages in an alloyed devotional service. Of this there is no doubt. And then here starts the Chaturasloki itself, the four more important verses of the Gita, Chaturasloki. I am the source of all spiritual and material worlds. Everything emanates from me. The wise, who perfectly know this, engage in my devotional service and worship me with all their hearts. The thoughts of my pure devotees dwell in me. Their lives are fully devoted to my service, and they derive great satisfaction and bliss from always enlightening one another and conversing about me. Those who are constantly devoted to serving me with love, I give the understanding by which they can come to me. To show them a special mercy, I, dwelling in their hearts, destroy with the shining lamp of knowledge the darkness born of ignorance. Here is finished these four verses, but I like to continue up to 22, if it's okay. Arjuna said, you are the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the ultimate abode, the purest, the absolute truth. You are the eternal, transcendental, original person, the unborn, the greatest. All the great sages such as Narada, Asita, Devala and Vyasa confirm this truth about you. And now you yourself are declaring it to me. O Krishna, now I'm 10:14, chapter 10, verse 14. O Krishna, I totally accept as truth all that you have told me. Neither the demigods nor the demons, O Lord, can understand your personality. Indeed, you alone know yourself by your own internal potency. O Supreme Person, origin of all, Lord of all beings, God of gods, Lord of the universe. Please tell me in detail of your divine opulences by which you pervade all these worlds. O Krishna, O Supreme Mystic, how shall I constantly think of you, and how shall I know you? In what various forms are you to be remembered, O Supreme Personality of Godhead? O Janardana, again, please describe in detail the mystic power of your opulences. I am never satiated in hearing about you, for the more I hear, the more I want to taste the nectar of your words. Verse 19. The Supreme Personality of Godhead said, yes, I will tell you of my splendorous manifestations, but only of those who are prominent, O Arjuna, for my opulence is limitless. I am the Super Soul, O Arjuna, sitting in the hearts of all living entities. I am the beginning, the middle, and the end of all beings. Of the Adityas, I am Vishnu. Of lights, I am the radiant sun. Of the Maruts, I am Marichi, and among the stars, I am the moon. Of the Vedas, I am the Samaveda. Of the demigods, I am Indra, the king of heaven. Of the senses, I am the mind. And in living beings, I am the living force, consciousness. So now, I like to go to verse 38 of this very same chapter, 10:38. Anyone like to read? Okay, I'll read it. Among all beings of suppressing lawlessness, I am punishment. And of all those who seek victory, which is also in today's verse, Vijaya, who said, I am morality, which is also Nitihi. Nitihi is also there. So, of those who seek victory, I am morality. Of sacred things, I am silence. And of the wise, I am the wisdom. We'll go up to verse 42. Furthermore, O Arjuna, I am the generating seed of all existences. There is no being moving or not moving that can exist without me. O mighty conqueror of enemies, there is no end to my divine manifestations. What I have spoken to you is but a mere indication of my infinite opulences. Know that all opulent, beautiful, and glorious creations spring but from a spark of my splendor. But what need is there, Arjuna, for all this detailed knowledge? With a single fragment of myself, I pervade and support this entire universe. So we're talking about God, basically. And then I'd like to go to chapter 11, verse 55. And then I'd like to read the verse, if we have some time, and then also the purport. This is a very nice verse, I think. There's so much information here, which is very relevant and summarizes so many things. I'm jumping the Sanskrit. Sorry about that. My dear Arjuna, he who engages in my pure devotional service, free from the contaminations of fruitive activities and mental speculation, he who works for me, who makes me the supreme goal of his life, and who is friendly to every living entity, sorry, to every living being, he certainly comes to me. Purport. Anyone who wants to approach the supreme of all the personalities of Godhead on the Krishna Loka planet in the spiritual sky and be intimately connected with the Supreme Personality Krishna must take this formula as stated by the Supreme himself. Therefore, this verse is considered to be the essence of Bhagavad Gita. The Bhagavad Gita is a book directed to the conditioned souls who are engaged in the material world with the purpose of lording it over material nature, and who does not know of the real spiritual life. The Bhagavad Gita is meant to show how one can understand his spiritual existence and his eternal relationship with the Supreme Spiritual Personality, and to teach one how to go back home, back to Godhead. Now, here is the verse which clearly explains the process by which one can attain success in his spiritual activity, devotional service. As far as work is concerned, one should transfer his energy entirely to Krishna conscious activities. As stated in the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu 1-255, the Sanskrit, no work should be done by any man except in relationship to Krishna. This is called Krishna karma. One may be engaged in various activities, but one should not be attached to the result of his work. The result should be done only for him. For example, one may be engaged in business, but to transform that activity into Krishna consciousness, one has to do business for Krishna. If Krishna is the proprietor of the business, then Krishna should enjoy the profit of the business. If a businessman is in possession of thousands of dollars, and he has to offer all this to Krishna, he can do it. This is work for Krishna. Instead of constructing a big building for his sense gratification, he can construct a nice temple for Krishna, and he can install the deity of Krishna and arrange for the deity's service, as is outlined in the authorized books of devotional service. This is all Krishna karma. This is also very nice, goes on and on, very nice purport. But since we have some time, and today we're reading from the last verse of Bhagavad Gita, so I thought it would be nice to have a kind of a little bit of overview, a little bit of panoramic few things. So I like to go to chapter 12, from verse 6, which is very nice also. Verse 6, 7, and onwards, up to 20. But those who worship me, giving up all their activities unto me, and being devoted to me without deviation, engaged in devotional service, and always meditating upon me, having fixed their minds upon me, O son of Prita, for them I am the swift deliverer from the ocean of birth and death. Just fix your mind upon me, text 8, the Supreme Personality of Godhead and engage all your intelligence in me. Thus you will live in me always without a doubt. My dear Arjuna, O winner of wealth, if you cannot fix your mind upon me without deviation, then follow the regulative principles of Bhakti Yoga. In this way, develop a desire to attain me. If you cannot practice the regulations of Bhakti Yoga, then just try to work for me, because by working for me, you will come to the perfect stage. If, however, you are unable to work in this consciousness of me, then try to act giving up all results of your work and just try to be self-realized. If you cannot take to this practice, then engage yourself in the cultivation of knowledge. Better than knowledge, however, is meditation, and better than meditation is renunciation of the fruits of action. For by such renunciation, one can attain peace of mind. One who is not envious, but is a kind friend to all living entities, who does not think himself a proprietor, and is free from false ego, who is equal in both happiness and distress, who is tolerant, always satisfied, self-controlled, and engaged in devotional service with determination, his mind and intelligence fixed on me, such a devotee of mine is very dear to me. He by whom no one is put into difficulty and who is not disturbed by anyone, who is equipoised in happiness and distress, fear and anxiety, is very dear to me. My devotee, who is not dependent on the ordinary course of activities, who is pure expert without cares, free from all pains, and not striving from some result, is very dear to me. One who neither rejoices nor grieves, who neither laments nor desires, and who renounces both auspicious and inauspicious things, such a devotee is very dear to me. One who is equal to friends and enemies, who is equipoised in honor and dishonor, heat and cold, happiness and distress, fame and infamy, who is always free from contaminating association, always silent, unsatisfied with anything, who doesn't care for any residence, who is fixed in knowledge, and who is engaged in devotional service, such a person is very dear to me. And verse 20, those who follow this imperishable path of devotional service and who completely engage themselves with faith, making me the supreme goal, are very, very dear to me. So, it's 8:15. I read a lot of things. Have you got any comment or any question? Okay, because they may be pure materially, but actually real wealth is not material wealth. Real wealth means spiritual realization, you know, spiritual knowledge and love for Krishna. So yes, some brahmanas, they may be, but actually that's not an obstacle. If you understand that the goal of life is to go back to Godhead or to serve Krishna, to love Krishna, then because wherever there is a verse in the Gita, it's explained that wherever the devotee lacks, Krishna carries. So whatever those brahmanas need, Krishna provides. So that's real, understanding that is real wealth. You know, you may have a lot of money, but you know, if it's, there is no connection with God, then it's not the same happiness and it's nothing comparable at all. And also, Krishna fulfills the desires. So, if a devotee just desires that, but the devotee, they don't desire this. They know there is no happiness in possessing and possessing, you know. Another thing is, so Krishna provides if they desire those things. But another thing is this concept of, I don't know if you know about this concept called Isavasya. Isavasya means we change our consciousness. We understand that everything belongs to Krishna. Everything. It's like if I go to a supermarket. So we're talking about renouncing things, right? I renounce this. Some people in India, they are very renounced. Other places also, you know, they are very, very renounced. I don't want this. I don't want that. You know, but that's not real renunciation. So isavasya means that you understand that everything belongs to Krishna. So you take birth, right? We take birth and then we live for some time, you know, and then we have some things. We have some flat car or Miranga or whatever you have. And then you think it's yours, but it's not. Because those things, actually, before you took birth, maybe, you know, everything is eternally belonging to Krishna. So that means that we also going to lose all those things at the time of death. So the thing is, we get attached to those things, and meanwhile we are living. So that's also important. It's another concept that will solve also so many problems in the world, because this attachment to matter creates so many troubles, wars, and so many other problems, like distribution of wealth, very unbalanced, and very so much unhappiness, just because they don't understand this concept, or we don't understand the concept of isavasya. Everything belongs to Krishna. He's the real enjoyer, he's the proprietor of everything, he's the controller. It's just a matter of realizing that this is like that. It's just a matter of realizing that that's the truth, really. You know. Any other question or comment or anything? Today we were reading the last verse of the Gita. Tomorrow we start again. So we ask everyone that it would be very nice if you come. You're welcome. And the musicians are supposed to come now, bhajaneers, but they are not coming. And I like to read for you. I prepared some things. There's a nice quote, let's see if I find it, about morality. Morality. Because the verse says there will always be morality, right? How does it go? Wherever there is Krishna, the master of all mystics, and wherever there is Arjuna, the supreme archer, there will also certainly be opulence, victory, extraordinary power, and morality. That is my opinion. Sanjaya speaking. So I found several things, and one of them is about morality. Niti Shastra, right? You want to talk about this?
No,
I thought that was... Oh, no, it's just... it is actually from... Yes, this Danur Shastra is about war, military science. But when I want to quote from the teachings of Queen Kunti, chapter 10, it is explained here by Prabhupada. Any activities that are spiritual are all good. And any activities that are material are all bad. This is the difference between spiritual and material. So the so-called morality and goodness of this material world is all bad. But in the spiritual world, even so-called immorality is good. We must understand this. For example, to dance with the wives of others at the dead of night is immoral, at least according to Vedic civilization. Even today in India, a young woman will never be allowed to go to a young man at the dead of night to dance with him. But we shall find in Srimad Bhagavatam that as soon as all the gopis, the young cowherd girls of Vrindavan, heard Krishna's flute, they immediately came to dance with him. Now, according to material conceptions, this is immoral, but from the spiritual point of view, this is in accord with the greatest morality. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu therefore said, Ramya kachit upasana vraja vadu vargena ya kalpita. Oh, there is no better mode of worship than that which was conceived by the vraja vadus, the damsels of Vrindavan. After Chaitanya Mahaprabhu accepted the renounced order of life, he very strictly avoided association with women. Even in his family life, he never played any jokes with women. He was very humorous, but only with men, not with women. Once he spoke some joking words with his wife Vishnupriya. When Sachimata, Lord Chaitanya's mother, was searching for something, he jokingly said, "Maybe your daughter-in-law has taken it." But in his whole life, these are the only joking words we find in relation to women. He was very strict. And then I jumped because there is another story about immorality in relation to Prahlad Maharaj and the killing of his father Hiranyakashipu, which is not immoral, even if he is in favor of that. So there is here I want to read also, it's very quick. It says, first canto of Bhagavatam, it says, wise rulers of all states should take lessons from Maharaj Pariksit in how to maintain peace and morality by subduing the upstarts and quarrelsome people who indulge in wine, illicit connection with women, gambling and meat eating supplied by regularly maintained slaughterhouses. In this age of Kali, regular license is issued for maintaining all these different departments of quarrelsome people. So how can they expect peace and morality in the state? The state fathers, therefore, must follow the principles of becoming wiser by devotion to the Lord, by chastising the breaker of discipline, and by uprooting the symptoms of quarrel, as mentioned above. If we want blazing fire, we must use dry fuel. Blazing fire and moist fuel go ill together. Peace and morality can prosper only by the principles of Maharaj Pariksit and his followers. So basically, it is actually all good. Whatever Krishna does is moral and is for the benefit and happiness of others, you know. So so-called morality, if you don't understand Krishna, then it's not really, it's not beneficial for anyone, you know. Because morality basically means understanding what is good and what is bad, you know. And there are different types of morality, like descriptive and normative. Descriptive morality describes morality. Those things are good, you know. Those things are, like, I want to read it. I was finding in the Wikipedia. Morality, from the Latin moralitas, manner, chapter, proper behavior, is a sense that differentiates intentions, decisions, and actions between those that are good or right and bad or wrong. A moral code is a system of morality, for example, according to a particular philosophy, religion, culture, etc. Immorality is the active opposition of opposition to morality. And then descriptive refers to personal or cultural values, codes of conduct, or social mores that distinguish between right and wrong in the human society. Describing morality in this way is not making a claim about what is objectively right or wrong, but only referring to what is considered right or wrong by an individual or some group of people. So it's descriptive morality is saying those people consider that is moral, those other people consider that is moral, but it's not giving a judgment, definitely answer, you know, that's normative morality. But both of them are just with no knowledge of what is reality, what is truth, what is Krishna, you know, behind that. And also, there is another, in this verse, it's speaking about, well, you look really bored, all of you. Like, sorry about this. I'll try to get better. This is my first class. But this is mysticism. It's another word I use here, Yoga Ishvara. He is the master of all mystic powers, right? So I'm going to jump this definition also, it's very boring. It's a conversation with Dr. Singh, with a Prabhupada disciple. And it's a book that we have, and you can buy. It's called Life Comes from Life. And Srila Prabhupada says, yes, unless he finds the ultimate source, he's not actually practicing science. Unless you find Krishna, the scientist, they're not practicing science, really. And Dr. Singh says, does understanding mysticism means knowing that every day our bodies are dying? Is that mysticism? That realize that, yes, my body is dying. Is that mystical? And Prabhupada says, yes. He says, but the average man does not think he's dying, Prabhupada. That is due to foolishness. Every moment he is dying, but he is thinking, I shall live forever. Actually, death means from the very beginning of birth. Sorry, from the very moment of death. Means we are dying, you know. It's not that we're living. It's like a candle. Goes down, down, down. So life is like this. It's just like counting back. Like 10, 9, 8, 7. It's getting closer. So we should get ready, you know. We should get ready to this moment, because at the time of death determines what we are going to get, which body we're going to get next life. So it's very important to read Bhagavad Gita, Bhagavatam, specifically, Chaitanya Charitamrita. So, let's see if I find something else around here. Another quote that I found also interesting from the Srimad Bhagavatam 4th canto. Atheists are of the opinion that there is no need to accept the authority of the Supreme Personality of Godhead to be successful in religion, economic development, sense gratification, or liberation. According to them, dharma, or religious principles, are meant to establish an imaginary God to encourage one to become moral, honest, and just, so that the social orders may be maintained in peace and tranquility. Furthermore, they say that actually there is no need to accept God for this purpose, for if one follows the principles of morality and honesty, that is sufficient. Similarly, if one makes nice plans and works very hard for economic development, automatically the result of economic development will come. Similarly, sense gratification also does not depend on the mercy of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, for if one earns enough money by any process, one will have sufficient opportunity for sense gratification. Insofar as liberation is concerned, they say there is no need to talk of liberation, because after death, everything is finished. So, any comment or? Can I read? No, it's not really. So basically, Bhagavad Gita is a book of knowledge and is a book of action. It means that if you apply, if you follow the instructions given by Lord Krishna, which are instructions for our benefit, then it means that your life becomes successful. And it's not that it's blind faith, you know, that we are practicing and yes, we cross the fingers and at the end of life, hopefully we'll go to heaven or something like that. It's practical realization. You get revealed knowledge from within, you know, from the heart. Krishna is there, and he's not only there, he's everywhere. And the books that are explaining about different planetary systems and the whole universe and how to transcend the miseries of life, you know. It is very useful. It is science that explains how to control the mind and to avoid suffering. Prabhupada is explaining that unless you ask yourself how to avoid suffering, you are no better than an animal. So that these books actually has the power. They have the power to elevate our consciousness and transport us, move us from here, the ocean of birth and death we are in now, entangled, to the highest planet of the spiritual world, the best place you can imagine. The best place with the association of Krishna. So, great personalities were reading from this book, you know. And the thing is that you may read it and you don't get it because we are contaminated, you know. So the powerful personalities like Srila Prabhupada, they have the power to enter in our hearts because our hearts are like covered with so many clouds, you know. We're contaminated by lust, angry, anger, pride, all those things there. So, because the pure vibration, the knowledge, the compassion, the mercy of Prabhupada, for example, is able to just connect with the soul. These personalities can see beyond the body, you know. They have the spiritual eyes and are guided by Krishna. So when you hear a class talk by these personalities, we should go and hear. It is very important, very beneficial, because Krishna is speaking through them. They're just an instrument, and they're is Krishna, is God himself speaking through the mouth, so you can actually get the benefit, you know. And everyone in the class is thinking, oh, he's speaking to me, you know. And that is also mystical. So tomorrow we start again this book, and there are so many blessings if you or if you like to read by yourself, you know, on internet also you can access. It is very important. For example, some blessings, we just read a few verses ago. Let me see if I find it. It's last part of chapter 18. Also, we encourage to give class to everyone because we are a preaching movement. So we're supposed to be preaching outside all these people who are suffering. So we should get ready to help them. This is what Prabhupada wanted, that we try to be preachers, not only preachers, also gurus, so we can liberate more people. This verse 68, page 700, saying, for one who explains the supreme secret to the devotees, pure devotional service is guaranteed. So if you explain Bhagavad Gita to others, wherever you go, pure devotional service, the highest happiness, the best state of consciousness you can imagine, is guaranteed. It's guaranteed. And at the end, he will come back to me, God is speaking. And then 69, next verse. There is no servant in this world more dear to me than he, nor will ever be one more dear. So if you want to be dear to Krishna, then explain Bhagavad Gita. It's not that difficult. You just find out some verses that you open the book, you hear and there, try to find some words, and just talk. It's not that complicated. It is said that the fear of death is the greatest fear. But then there is another fear, which is fear to speak in public. It is very great. Like, I'm organizing this schedule in the Bhagavad Gita classes, and I ask devotees, you know, devotees who have been like 20, 30 years practicing Krishna consciousness, please, Prabhu, we really like to hear from you. You can enlighten them. No, really, like, super terrified, you know. And it's not like that, you know. It shouldn't be like this, because if we want to please Prabhupada, we should get ready. And it's not that complicated, you know. Krishna helps. Basically, Krishna helps from within, you know. Yesterday, I was asking about Michael from Germany. please give class. And he told me in the morning, Prabhu, I think I cannot do it. I cannot do it, you know. And I said, you just, this is your mind, you know. Because the mind is like, we are trapped by the mind. This is also we have to realize that we are like trapped by the mind. The mind is telling you, don't do this, you're going to fail. Your prestige or your honor is going to go down. And then nobody's going to be interested. Everyone is going to be against you, laugh at you. No, it's not like that. We try to be kind to others. We try to help others, you know. Not see the defects. And we see defects, we kick them out. Or maybe we say, but we're supposed to be friends. So we're supposed to help each other. Otherwise, why are you doing here? Practicing spiritual life, you know, if you're not trying to help others. So the thing is that, yeah, we should lose all fears and then try to give classes, try to talk something. And if you don't feel like to, still you apologize. Sorry, I don't feel inspired today. Anybody else like to talk? And that's it. It's no big thing. So that's what I wanted to say, to lose this fear. Yes, Prabhu. Normally, the Bhagavad Gita class is given in the temple, and people come. Whoever is interested, come. It's like a faculty or university. It's not that the teacher goes out in the streets, but the students come. Yes, wherever you go, Lord Chaitanya said that wherever you go, you speak about Krishna. There was one small girl, I think it was daughter of Shyamasundara Sarasvati, in the early days, some disciple. And the Sarasvati was just asking people, you know, do you know who is Krishna? And Prabhupada said, yeah, this is good preaching. She was asking, you know who is Krishna? And no, I don't know. The Supreme Personality of Godhead. That's it. Cannot you do that? A small lady can do this, you know, with like 20, 30 people, you know, 40, whatever. It's not that difficult. The thing is the mind. The mind is like, no, don't do it. So we have to overcome the mind. One of the fences? What, is that what you said? One of the fences? It's preached to the faithless.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, yes, one of the offenses is to yes, therefore, you have to develop the ability. This is an art. Is this not that you explain the highest thing to somebody who's going to reject it? You don't. If you see the person is going to reject it, but this preaching is very good. This Sarasvati is asking, do you know who is Krishna? And then, no, yes, okay, you, no, so it's the Supreme Person. So you must use your intelligence, you know. It's not that you start, I used to do that, I used to distribute books and start explaining, you know. I saw like a favorable person and you get enthused and you start talking and talking about Krishna and Krishna and Krishna. And then finally the person rejects you, you know. And you are committing an offense, you don't have helped the person, and it's like horrible. So you don't expose, like if you have a lot of money, of course you're very renounced, you don't mind, but if you wanna, you have a family you have to maintain or whatever, you don't want to lose the money, you don't put it like this, everyone can see, right? Or you have like a diamond, you don't go immediately in the street. So this is a diamond, you try to protect it, but you try to give to others, you don't keep for yourself. But you use your intelligence in such a way, and this you develop with time. It's difficult, you know. But basically by trying, Krishna is pleased. By trying to help others, Krishna is pleased, you know. And like gradually. Basically, the best thing is to give prasadam, you know, to start with, because by giving prasadam, people are friends. Everyone is they smile and asking, is this from India? Ingredients, blah blah blah. So this is a good way to start, to give prasadam, purify them. But yes, you can preach wherever you go, you can explain, this is a wonderful book. They say no problem, next person. But basically we are talking about here, you know, and wherever you go, maybe you go also to your country, one day you will go probably, and then you can give nice classes. So we can get ready. We can get ready. You can have the opportunity here to overcome our fears, you know, and to please Krishna, and to have the pure devotional service guaranteed. Who wants to have pure devotional service guaranteed? Please lift your hands up. Who wants to be very happy in this room? You don't want to be very happy? Okay. So just do it. Just try to do this and help all those people out there. They don't really deserve, some of them, but some others they do. So this is a preaching mission, so we should try to do something about it. And then I was explaining about Mitchell, this boy. And then yesterday he was in ecstasy. He didn't know what to say. He just explained his life here in the temple, basically. No philosophy, just a little bit of universal form, 11th chapter. He just explained, I woke up in the morning and, you know, I tried to be regulated and this and that. And he was like in happiness, like anything, you know, and afterwards. So that means that Krishna is pleased and is like giving you nectar. So who wants to have nectar here? Please lift your hands up. You want to have? You? So basically this is what it is. And then because another thing is that you can die. Like Prabhupada say, bus, you finish like that, any second, you know, any moment. So be intelligent, yes, proactive. Proactive means before that happened or something happened, you get ready. You know what to do. So you are aware. It's not that you are kind of sleepy, lazy, and things happen and you are lamenting and defeated. No, you try to work with intelligence and then you think, oh, this is really good, I'm going to endeavor for this, I'm going to do it, you know, I'm going to do it, yes, that's it. And if it goes wrong, so what, but I tried, you know. Not that after 30 years I'm scared of giving class, what's this, you know, forget it. So now there is another verse, 70, it said, and I declare, Lord Krishna speaking, that he who studies this sacred conversation, this is what we are doing here, of ours, worships me with his intelligence. So that means you're very intelligent people, and you are worshiping Krishna. And one who listens with faith and without envy becomes free from sinful reactions. That means you get free from your karma just by listening with faith and without envy, and attains to the auspicious planets where the pious dwell. If you go to the end of the purport, we are in page 702, and it says, those who are righteous, sorry for my accent, I know it's a bit horrible, those who are righteous in performing devotional service, but who are not pure, can attain the planetary system of the pole star, or Dhruva Loka, where Dhruva Maharaj is presiding. He is a great devotee of the Lord, and he has a special planet, which is called the pole star. So that means that this is, you go there, you know, just by listening. It's not bad. It's the best place in the universe, and it's a spiritual planet, just by listening, Bhagavad Gita. So it's a good thing to do, and basically these guys are not coming, so maybe should I start the bhajans, Madhu, or, yeah, so basically I'm just trying to encourage everyone to talk about Bhagavad Gita, and also to listen. It is very beneficial, and it is the greatest activity you can imagine. I'm just going to read Gandhi, this very famous person, saintly politician from India. When doubts haunt me, it's in the back of the book, and we use this for distributing books so many times. When doubts haunt me means when they are following me like ghosts, you know, doubts. When disappointments stare me in the face, You know, you expect something and then you get like, you don't get it. You get disappointed. And see, and I see not one ray of hope in the horizon. I turned to the Bhagavad Gita, this book, and find a verse to comfort me. And I immediately begin to smile in the midst of overwhelming sorrow. Those who meditate on the Gita will derive fresh joy and new meanings from it every day. Basically, we are practicing yoga, and all these sufferings, all these disappointments, doubts, there is no ray of hope, there is distress, there is so many things we experience, right? Suffering, that means we are not connected with the Lord. We are in the mind. Basically, the mind, we are actually, you have to realize, we are, at least myself, we are servants, we are Godasas, we are not Goswamis, we are not Maharaj, like Yadananda Maharaj or so many other Maharaj. We are not like that at the moment, at least myself. So that means that we are under the control of the senses. Godasa. So means that whatever the mind says, I say, yes, my dear mind, I'm going to serve you very nice. I'm going to eat again, even if I'm not hungry. Or yes, I'm going to do this because it's an urge. And this urge, and it's like, do it, do this, do this. You have to do this, and you do it. That means we are not connected with Lord Krishna. So everything that is spiritual, it is explained here. So if you read it, you just read it, then you just connect it. It's just transcending the mind, transcending, and it's like all these pure energies come through you. This is spoken by a pure person. Any comment or question?
What's a better way?
Better way? The best way is to chant the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra. It is the most powerful mantra because the names of Krishna are there, the most powerful names of Krishna. And it is exactly the same that associating with Lord Krishna. You chant Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, it is actually the same that is, staying with the Lord. Yeah, it's Ramanam, Kirtanam. All these activities that we do are purifying us. So reading is very important because Hare Krishna Maha Mantra, it purifies you the most, but here the knowledge is given. So the knowledge means that you your intelligence becomes stronger, you know. That means the intelligence is the driver, you know. You may pacify your mind, but intelligence directs. So that means that if you know these verses, then at certain point Krishna is gonna, they're gonna appear in your mind, and you're gonna think about this. You're gonna know what is life all about. You're gonna think, oh, I'm suffering because of this, but no, that's really not important. You know, you don't suffer anymore. So intelligence, how to deal? You know, the thing is, we have to be aware. You know, that the time of death is coming and you don't know when, maybe tomorrow. So all this knowledge is needed for us if we really want to go back to Godhead. So it is needed. It is more needed than anything else. This knowledge, transcendental knowledge, is the mature fruit of all mysticism. So you should know it. You should know this. And then because you get connected with Lord Krishna, then you can know who you really are. Because we don't know who we are. We can know what spiritual form we have. We can be full of bliss. So the most powerful thing is how long you've been practicing?
2 years.
2 years, so you know, prasadam, chanting Hare Krishna. But even more powerful than chanting by japa is come to the kirtans. Prabhupada said as much as possible you should come to the temple. You know, at least if you cannot Mangalarati, any time, you know, listen, and you get purified. So, I'm just, any question? Anything else? I'm trapped here in a long class.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it's true. It's very,
takes you out from the film, right? From the drama sometimes, yeah? Like, yes, I'm involved in a drama and I believe it, you know?
Yeah.
And it's like, I remember Yadunanda Maharaj was explaining an example that we are with somebody else who is sleeping and is like suffering like anything because he's having a nightmare, you know? It's like really suffering. You can see him. He's sweating and he's crying and he's shouting and he's suffering like anything, you know? But it's just a dream, right? So we are in all this drama, you know, sometimes, you know, like the mind is like attacking us, like when Maya attacks, you know? And then you just involve, you know, all these identifications and all these things, you know, tough time. So it's just a dream, you know? It's like, wake up, come on. So, yeah. Just by connecting with Krishna, then all this disappears, you know. Basically, it's like that, you know. It's just like dissipates all these clouds, you know, in our consciousness. And then we can carry on life, you know. People commit suicide. And it's like, you know, such an illusion, you know. So, yeah, it is very beneficial. We should just read and read Bhagavad Gita, Bhagavatam, like that. Anything else? So tomorrow we start, and we'd like to really encourage everyone to come, to listen. We just have the benefits of listening Bhagavad Gita, and to give class. For example, yourself, Mahendra Prabhu, you're welcome to give class. You give very nice classes. And we like to have some really good speakers. And yeah, I think we should do some bhajan, right? Madhu? Or should I keep yeah. So basically, there is knowledge. Actually, just one verse more. The 13.8. Is it 13.8? Now the kirtan starts. 13.8 to 12. It says, I'm just read. Humility, pridelessness, non-violence, tolerance, simplicity, blah, blah, blah. Krishna is speaking what is really knowledge, you know. And said, all this I declare to be knowledge, and besides this, whatever there may be, is ignorance. Yeah, Sisi Radha Gopinath, ki jai. Sisi Goranitai, ki jai. Jagannath, Varadhan Subhadra, ki jai. Vara Premanande, Hare Hare Go. Thank you, Hare Krishna.